Hello, welcome once again to the Bird and the Beard and the Beard. And with me, as always, is the Bird.
Hello, back again.
How you doing today, Bird?
I'm good. Big one today, episode 10.
Yeah, episode 10.
We've come so far.
Yeah, so far. Oh, boy. Yeah, episode 10. It's wild. I'm hoping for episode 100. You know, it's been a long time, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah, if I don't die first.
If you don't die first. I'm not wishing you death, though, you know, by the way.
No, of course not. That's why it's taken us so long to get this far. It's just, I can't do it tonight. I'm ill.
I enjoy your company. If that means anything to you, you know.
It's weird, isn't it? It means we've officially been talking, like, non-stop, collectively, for 10 hours straight.
Yeah.
Because each episode is, like, an hour long, right?
So yeah, right around there.
So episode 100 will be, whoa, that's a lot of talking.
That's a lot of talking, yeah. So, you watch anything good lately at all?
What did I watch? What did I watch? I watched a weird series and I've completely forgotten what it was already. That's how good it was. I'm basically just trying to watch a lot of things that Netflix recommends me because I've run out of things that I actually want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently watching Persons Unknown, which is sort of the type of thing I love to watch. You know, a group of strangers wake up in the middle of nowhere and you know, see what happens from there. But yeah, it's not really grabbing me, I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what I watched. I watched 666 Park Avenue, which I've never heard of.
It's a television show, right?
Yeah, it's a television show. It's quite new and it's got, you know, quite a famous cast. You know, Vanessa Williams is in every episode. Whoopi Goldberg has a cameo in one episode or two episodes. So yeah, it's quite, you know, big, but I'd never heard of it until it popped up on Netflix. So I gave it a go, which, because it's quite sort of Faustian. If you watch Supernatural, it's basically like the crossroads demons.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they say, I can do this for you, I can make you a famous musician, I'll give you 10 years and then your soul is mine, you know, that sort of thing, which is basically the point of the series. That they all live in this place called the Drake, and the guy who owns it somehow ends up sort of owning every tenant as well, via various nefarious deeds. That was quite good. So yeah, that was quite interesting. I like shows where, like, you've got a sort of mobster bad guy demon thing that owns everybody and runs the show and all this sort of thing, but also comes across as not, you know, evil necessarily.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, he is a demon, he is bartering for people's souls, but he's not, you know, red skin and devil horns. He's, you know, this guy in a suit who sort of does people favors and then sort of worms his way in by being nice. And it's quite sort of sinister and tricky in that sort of respect, you know.
Yeah, they I think they canceled that show here. It came on one of the local channels here in the States, and I think they canceled it after one season or three quarters of a season, somewhere along the lines like that.
Yeah, it got to, I think it was called Lazarus Part 1, and there was no Part 2. But it must have been the end of Season 1, because it rounds off very nicely. You know, there's no, like, I mean, you could carry on with it, but there is a sort of ending mm-hmm. to the series. So if it had to end, there was quite a good place anyway. And I'm not saying I would have, you know, lobbied for a series 2 or anything. It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen, but it was interesting, and it would have been interesting to see sort of the root of all this, because the building itself is sort of the host of evil and it's kind of alive in its own way, so it would have been interesting to learn more about that, but it's not going to keep me awake at night not knowing either.
Yeah. Anything else I've mentioned that you watched?
I think that's about it, really. I've been doing a lot of Simsing this week because Sims 4 came out yesterday.
Oh, yeah, and I've seen that.
Yeah, and my friend has got it, and she's absolutely Sims mad. She's got, you know, every single expansion pack ever. So, because she was mentioning it all the time, I was like, oh, I quite fancy going on The Sims. So I've been playing that quite a lot this week, and I've built a lesbian household.
It's funny, you know, every time I play that game, and it never works out for me. Either I'm burning down my house, or I'm being indicted as, like, a embezzler or something like that.
Oh,
or,
no.
It never works out for me, so I stop playing this stupid game. And yeah,
oh, dude.
I had a good time for a little while, but I played in the low end of The Sims when they had, like, maybe one expansion.
Yeah, no, I'm on Sims 3 at the moment, but I did play back, you know, back in the days of Sims 1 when all you had to do was kiss to make a baby.
Because that's what you do, see?
Yeah. Well, you couldn't even do that in the first one. In the first one, there were no babies. And then the second one, you'd snog someone, and then it would say, do you want to have a baby?
Well, yes.
Yes, we exchange saliva, and that's how baby making works.
That's what I was told, and I still believe it. It's sort of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I, on the other hand, watched a whole bunch of stuff, and I'll tell you about a few things. I went to the cinema and saw Guardians of the Galaxy, finally.
Oh, yeah, that's been getting pretty good reviews.
It's probably the most fun I've had at the theater in a long time.
That's good.
And it's a lot of fun. I think anybody could watch it and have a good time, you know, with the action and the jokes. And Rocket and Groot are my favorite on-screen duo at the moment because they're like, get a real Han and Chewie vibe going on.
Mm.
Except Rocket's a raccoon, and he's very feisty.
Oh, is that who that is? Okay, yeah. Okay. I've seen pictures of everyone, I just don't know what the names are. Apart from the tree thing, I know he's Groot, is it?
He's Groot, yes.
Yeah.
And they work together really fun, and yeah, it's really fun to watch. I can't say much about it, and it hasn't already been said about Guardians, because lots of folks talk about it, and I finally went and seen it for myself. And then I went and saw As Above, So Below, that new horror found footage thing, which I'm talking about it like it was really bad or something, but it really wasn't bad. It actually did something that most found footage films do not do. They explain what's going on in the plot, and I admire them for that.
Yeah.
I was sitting there like, because when you started out, you get the same shaky cam BS as you get there found footage film, but this one, actually, as you were going along other journeys, is basically about this group of spelunkers who find out. Yes, spelunkers. They go underneath the catacombs underneath France because they find out that there's possibly treasure down there and a possible gate to hell.
Well, ooh, yeah, definitely head towards the gate to hell. That's a brilliant idea.
They find both of these things, and chaos ensues, and a lot of dark and shaky cam. But I enjoyed it because they happen to explain everything. It's kind of like The Goonies, but with a lot more damnation and risk. but there is rich stuff involved, you know.
That should definitely be the tagline.
Sort of like The Goonies.
But more damnation.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be a core in the back of the box on my end, you know.
Yeah.
That's a big core for the bird and the beard right there. Oh, they dropped a whole bunch of new stuff on Netflix that I've been watching. I rewatched the last season of The League because the new season started this week. And that's always funny. I watched Beverly Hills Cop 2 for no good reason because it was on there.
That's
my favorite one because you're getting a new one supposedly and I'm hoping it's going to be funny.
You know what? I forgot to tell you what I watched. I've been thinking like the past week or so, trying to think back. Today, I finally watched the second Hobbit movie with my mum. So
Smaug.
That was saying yes, the Desolation of Smaug. Why I always called Smaug, like caught. AU. That's how I always pronounced it. But apparently, I'm wrong.
What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I like it. I'm in a sort of mixed bag about it because I feel like it just doesn't have the sort of caliber that Lord of the Rings has. You know, there's something really special about Lord of the Rings. And I feel like The Hobbit sort of just misses that somehow. I don't know what it is. It's just not up to that standard.
Well, probably because they took one book and stretched it out into three movies.
Yeah, they did do that. I think that's what it is. I think Lord of the Rings, because Peter Jackson was a big Lord of the Rings fan, you know, growing up, and he was waiting for someone to do the movies, and no one ever did, so he was like, oh, I'll do them. And I think that really comes across in Lord of the Rings, that it's like storytelling, you know, showing the story of this book that is loved by millions of people and making it into a film so more people can enjoy it. Whereas The Hobbit, I feel, is more Hollywood blockbuster entertainment movie to make people come and see it, as opposed to an adaptation of the book.
He's definitely after the Hollywood dollar now.
Yeah.
I just want to do horror films again. That's all I wanted to do, is like, give me a good splatter fest again, like that, like Brain Dead or Dead Alive. Yeah, give me one of those.
Yeah, maybe we should do that with The Hobbit.
Nah, you might see some blood, but not like, you won't see a old lady eating custard and coming out of a hole in her neck.
What I mean. Like, have the Hobbit cast, like have Legolas, like ripping someone's face off and stuff like that. That'd be amazing. I'd watch that.
I would watch that too.
Also, a weird thing I found about the second Hobbit movie, the whole time I was watching it, I kept going, that bit is going to be in the game. That bit's going to be in the game. That bit's going to be... Because, like, there's so much CG and sort of cinematic, you know, cutscene style battle sequences that it just looked like they were sort of putting it in there to lift it straight into the game, you know, for people to watch, to play.
Yeah.
And it was really weird because I've never experienced that with a film before, watching it and going, yeah, that bit's going to be in the game and I can imagine doing this, this and this for that bit. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this whole sequence where, have you seen it yet?
No, I have a weird history with that. That you can spoil it if you want to. Really, it's way past the borders of spoiling, so go ahead and do it.
Well, it's been out for ages, not really a spoiler yes. anyway. But there's this whole, like, I don't know, it's quite a long sequence, actually, probably about 7 minutes, of this escape scene where they climb into barrels and, like, float down the river.
Yep.
But there's this whole battle going on at the same time. Like, the dwarves and the hobbit are in the barrels, the elves are trying to get them back, the orcs are attacking the elves, so the hobbits are attacking the orcs, and the elves are also attacking the... You know, it's a lot of things going on at once. And a lot of it is CG because a lot of it requires sort of like backflips and running over people's heads and doing all sorts of things that, you know, aren't physically possible. And the whole time I was watching that, I was thinking, I've seen that in a game. I could do that in a game. You know, it was really, really when I noticed how sort of heavily influenced it had been by gaming as opposed to other cinema. And I think, and I just, like, I thought that was quite interesting how modern cinema has been, you know, influenced by games as opposed to the other way around. And I think it's probably not the first film to do it, but it's the first film where I've actively noticed it, and it's probably going to be more commonplace nowadays because of the gaming
industry. It was more apparent in the 90s when they wanted to do video game tie-in because they were everywhere then.
Yeah, like Resident Evil, that sort of thing, yeah. But, I mean, obviously that's not 90s, but...
Mm-hmm.
For more of an action RPG style game as opposed to like a first person shooter, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I've really noticed it that way. But yeah, and again with the CG, there were a lot of scenes with like the orcs and things where the whole scene was CGI footage of some orc talking in some language to some shadow thing in some language, you know. And all I could think when I was watching it was, if this had been Lord of the Rings, they would have actually had people in makeup doing that scene, and I would have enjoyed it so much more. I think CG is amazing. You know, people sit there and conjure these whole worlds just from the computer. I think that's absolutely fantastic, but I go to see films to see actors, you know, so
yeah.
But, you know, I'm old school. I like people in films and CG people in games.
I like people in suits too, trust me.
But on the flip side, I did enjoy it. It was good. You know, there were some funny moments, which is nice. You know, at first it was kind of like, oh, funny, that's weird. But The Hobbit is a kid's book. You know, The Lord of the Rings is the adult version. The Hobbit is the kid's book.
Yep.
So it was nice to have sort of the comic relief moments in it. And there's a couple of things that sort of link up to The Lord of the Rings as well, which are kind of nice, but kind of like, they didn't reference that in Lord of the Rings because obviously they didn't know it was going to happen. But in the same sort of way, it sort of goes, oh, that makes sense. That's quite nice. Yeah. It doesn't like affect the plot, but it's just sort of a nice little teaser, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was quite good. I think I enjoyed this one more than the first one.
Yeah, I was dragged to the cinema late night to go see the first one, and I fell asleep because I work nights, so I have a certain bedtime where I start getting groggy and drowsy.
Mm.
And when I get really relaxed, that's it, man. I fall right asleep, but that's what I did in that theater. And then I never caught the second one, so before that third one comes out, which I saw the preview for one of those movies, I'll sit through the first two, and then I'll decide if I want to go see the third one or not. But it looks pretty excellent.
The weird thing about it was, it took me about the first 20 minutes to get into it. Like, the first 15 minutes or so, I was going, I'm not going to enjoy this. This is, no, this isn't working.
If in case you didn't remember what happened in the last movie, here's a little recap of why they seem so tired and frustrated.
Well, they didn't do that, actually, and I was going, I can't remember what happened in the first film. Oh, shit, this is going to be interesting. But the first 15 minutes or so is the usual thing that's quite common now. Everything's in grayscale, and, you know, the main character's troubled, so he has to talk like this, and you can't understand what he's saying, and they have to turn it up really loud, and then suddenly the music starts, and you have to turn it down again.
Damn you, Howard Shore!
Really annoying. But once we got past that, it was good. And Benedict Cumberbatch as Smaug was good. Like, you can't really tell it's him because it's been through a lot of editing and it's got a lot of sort of Dracony bits added to it. But yeah, it was good.
I gotta give my voice some Dracony bits. That's a good editing term to use from now on. Dracony bits.
Hey, I always use the professional technical terms.
The bird, the beard. Now with Dracony bits. We'll see if he's still listening to it after that. You know.
Sounds like a weird porn.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Besides that stuff, we did three two Drifting commentaries, actually. We did Demons from 1985, the Lambert DeBava film, Night of the Living Dead, the original from 68, and then we did Stone Cold, the Brian Bosworth 1991 action awesomeness. You know, I use awesomeness as a noun because, you know, it's amazing to watch. Nothing like a motorcycle and going through a window, through a helicopter, exploding the helicopter. That's the scene. Nice. I love to watch. You know, it's far fetched, definitely, but, you know, it's something very fun to watch.
I think that might happen in Ultraviolet, actually.
Okay. Well, Stone Cold came first.
Oh yeah, Ultraviolet's like 2005 or something. So.
Oh boy. I've been watching a lot of New Girl for some reason. I love New Girl, so I was watching a lot of that on Netflix because they got the first two or three seasons on there, and I feel like rewatching New Girl because it makes me laugh, and yeah, it's a lot of fun to me.
Fair enough. I've never actually seen it.
It's enjoyable. I enjoy Zooey Deschanel actually a lot.
I know.
She got those big eyes, you know. Oh man. All right. We'll move right into to the features, I guess. We went to Thailand this time around, so there's no America or UK in this episode. And the Thai choices we chose, it was Emily's 13 Games of Death, Game of Death, and mine being Chocolate. Emily, let's talk about yours first, 13 Game of Death. Tell the folks a little bit about it.
The title kind of gives you a clue where it's coming from. This guy is literally just losing everything ever. He's lost his job. He's lost his girlfriend. His mum keeps ringing him asking for money, which he doesn't have, but he doesn't want to disappoint her. Just everything is going wrong for this guy. And then out of the blue, he gets a phone call saying, if you swat this fly, we'll give you some money. So he does it. He gets some money. And then they go, right, we've got 12 more challenges with a bit more money and a bit more risk. You have to do them all or none at all. Do you want to do it? Sort of thing. And it follows a story of him doing these challenges, and they do sort of link to him in a particular way. There's a lot of sort of flashbacks and things like that. And it quickly goes from comedy to being quite serious. And it's very sort of thriller-esque, I suppose, because as he's doing them, you know, the police get their eye on him, so they're trying to catch him while he's trying to keep going, because if he gets arrested, then the game's over as well, but he needs the money, and it becomes quite tense, I think, and high-strung, and it's an interesting watch, so that's why I recommended it.
Yeah, this one to me was, like you said, it's funny, but, you know, bittersweet at the same time, because...
Mm-hmm.
You don't know quite where this character's going to go, whether he's got to eat a fly to eating a plate of shit to beating up his ex-girlfriend's current boyfriend.
Very he beats her up, so I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. But she's very concerned for this guy, apparently. You know, and It seems like this guy, this game, which is, it's very misleading, the title, like 13, Game of Death, but there's actually only like, well, there's a bunch of deaths in this movie because one happens all at once.
Mm.
And, but the deaths to him, you know, would be the Game of Death. He's not really killing people himself, except for, you know, in an instance, you know, possibly at the end, you know, but yeah, morality kicks in a lot in this movie. Because, you know, he's not a killer. He's just this guy caught in this game desperately needing money.
Yeah.
It was wild. It was some really inventive stuff. I mean, this did more for me than Saw did, to tell you the absolute truth. But it didn't have a bunch of, you know, would you like... Well, there was the whole would you like to play a game type deal, but it was played more smart than, you know, the Saw movies were, in my opinion. Because this was a whole network of people. Mm-hmm. Apparently you find out that's running this game on these people just to mess with them, and you know, apparently they know everything about them because that all comes into play in this movie, that essentially he's his father doing all these bad things that his father done to him, and you know, he become the beast that he hates, and that's a thing in this movie. Any specific things that stood out to you, girl?
There were a few things. I'm going to be doing a little bit of comparison because, as I mentioned last episode, I saw the remake as well, 13 Sins. And I think that is the main difference for me, apart from the ending, but we'll not go into that, obviously. The main difference for me was that in this one, it's all about his past linking to his present and the things that people have done to him, he must now do to other people, blah, blah, blah. None of that is in the remake. And if it is, I've forgotten already, so it didn't leave much of an impact, you know. So I don't know if it is because it's an American remake and they do try and sort of simplify things a little bit like Saw, but it did sort of seem to be a little more skin deep, whereas this one was a little bit, you know, a little bit more, a little bit deeper, I suppose, under the flesh a bit more, you know, because it delves into his memories and his past and... really gets to him, which is what makes the games so challenging. The one you did mention with the eating the plate of dog poo, that stands out to me because he went for it, man.
He's laughing it up, man.
Oh, he just reached this point where he thought, oh, what the hell, I've come this far, and he just shovels it into his mouth, and there's a lot of it. You know, it's a full meal right there. It's not just one turd, it's a full meal. So, yeah, that was interesting. And the poor intern girl that he's made friends with and seems to be sort of potential love interest keeps turning up at the most inopportune moments, and he's got his mouth full of shit, or he's just swallowed a fly, or he's just, you know, done something completely bizarre, and she's just stood there looking at him like, what the hell? But she, bless her, she perseveres and she doesn't give up on him.
Yeah, definitely. That's a thing in this movie. Yeah, that girl, she's constantly all up in his business because she either likes him or she cares about him. Either way,
mm-hmm.
The boy, she delves further and further in what he's doing. All of a sudden, she's Nancy Drew and she figures out the whole spiel of what's going on, you know?
Yeah. There was the challenge with, I can't remember his name, but there's a man who sort of built his own house and he built a well in the house, and he's fallen in the well, and challenge number 8 or 10 or whatever it is to go and rescue this man and pull him out of the well. That was disgusting and horrible, and one of those, and I think I find like I see this sort of, I get this sort of feeling from Asian movies a lot more than I do from American and Western movies even, is this sort of like awkward humor of like something is so dire and horrible, it's funny, you know? Because this poor guy has been like bloated and in the water for 10 days or God knows how long, and he's got rigor mortis and he's fallen to pieces and it's disgusting, but it's hilarious.
The part where he threw the arm up there because he didn't want to leave any piece behind,
yes,
made me laugh so hard. I don't know what it is.
The bit that got me was he's trying to reach for his phone because he's got about 5 seconds to make a phone call to complete the challenge, and he accidentally throws it behind him into the well. Only this dead guy's rigor mortis's arm catches it. And then there's a shot of his face like, ah! Yeah. It's like, hey, high five, dude! It's so awkward. I love it.
For some reason, we had a wacky soundtrack to it in parts.
Yeah.
Like heroic type, bouncy type music.
Yeah.
That really didn't belong there, but, you know, that made me laugh too. There's no parts of it that should have made you laugh, but them putting that music in there.
Mm-hmm.
And little silly stuff like the corpse strapped to his back like a funky Yoda.
Yes, slowly leaning further and further away.
He's going to break in half because he's got him strapped to his chest like a... Oh, God. It's so nasty, but you can't help but laugh at this corpse. Uh-huh. Even the corpse is funny looking.
Yeah, and I mean, he's like smiling or something. Yeah. It's really weird.
Oh, yeah, this was good. I enjoyed this. I would have enjoyed it better without the crappy... Dementia Asian Extreme English dub. That was kind of... I always hate that in films.
But... Oh, I had the subtitles, so it was okay.
Oh, I didn't have that. I was enjoying movies better that way. So that's like the really biggest flaw for me for the movie is I had to watch it dubbed. But that's not a big flaw in this movie. I just like the psyche of the guy and how he broke down that easily but. He's basically broken all the way before they even give him the call to say, hey, you want to make $1 million the hard way? And, you know, him basically going to possible murder, especially the chair scene, the task number 8 where he is just beating the fuck out of this Asian boyfriend / rapist, whatever the hell's got going on there, and in the leather jacket, he just keeps pounding on him and saying, just stay down.
You know? That was another one. He's like, please, just go away. Because he kept getting up again and again and again and again. And it took so long and it was so awkward. Bless him.
Oh, God. That was something. Yeah, but like I said, this just did more for me than Saw, but it was kind of a Saw kind of deal. Like, you know, what would you do to get out or survive or to make a bunch of money? Would you kill your neighbor? Would you bludgeon this person? Would you essentially look at your fate in the eye, especially at the end of this movie, and do what you think needs to be done? But do you have the guts to do it? And then you find out at the end that, you know, does he or doesn't he? Because he's faced with that morality staring him in the face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the guts to do what's been torturing you all of your life, basically, to make you this milquetoast guy, this very timid guy, you know. And it really has a great conclusion. It has a bootleg Steven Seagal in it as the police guy. I forgot to mention that guy. But he's got the Seagal weight and ponytail going on, but he's Asian. Besides the dubbing, I really enjoyed this movie because half the characters kind of sounded kind of black. Not there's anything wrong with that, but they sounded kind of African-American. The absolute truth.
Weird. Although actually one of the themes in the remake is racism because the main guy is dating a black girl, so maybe that's some sort of weird link.
Could be a very weird link, yes.
Probably not.
probably. I'm reading too much into this for sure, yes. But, you got anything else you want to say about it all?
Kind of, but it's a bit of a spoiler, so I'm not really going to go into too much detail. But I will say there was one part about the ending that sort of I didn't agree with. Like, the ending as a whole, I think was a good ending. And, you know, in that circumstance, I like to think I would have done the same thing. But I think his reasoning would have made me do it as opposed to not do it. So, yeah, it was a bit like, really? That's going to stop you? Okay. So, yeah, that's a little bit cryptic, I'm aware, but I don't want to ruin it because it is a good story and you should watch it. And it is completely different to the American one, so you can watch one and not know the ending.
It usually is, yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, I think that's about it, really. I like the strange, you know, he meets quite a collection of characters on his journey, you know, this weird homeless guy who thinks he's the king of the universe.
And, I like that guy.
Yeah, me too, he's fabulous. And so a weird little old lady who He just wants to go home and hang the washing up.
Yeah. And that comes into play in a big way.
Mm. Yeah. They have that scene in the American remake, but they change it a little bit. And I actually think I kind of like... I don't know, I kind of like both of them. So it was interesting to watch the two different ones, because I knew what was coming, or I thought I did, because I'd seen the original one. And then it didn't happen the way I was expecting. And then it happened anyway, but in a different way, which Gary will understand because he's seen the film. But that's all I'm going to say. But so, I kind of like them both for that scene. But on the whole, this one is definitely better, in my opinion. Mostly for the weird sort of vibe that you get from it that you've mentioned already, the sort of like downtrodden, desperate, exhausted hero, but still kind of enjoyable and funny. Just bizarre mix that was quite fun to watch.
Yeah, because there are points of the film where he seems like he's into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's bludgeoning the new boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that's something I'd like to do. You know? Yeah.
Oh, challenge number 3, I think it might have been, was just like make a child cry, and he's like, yeah. Seems legit, let's go.
I just feel to just walk around and pinch a bunch of children, in my opinion, you know, just say, I mean, I can make 12 children cry. Pinch,
yeah, pinch, challenge pinch, accepted. Although they were all like karate students or something, weren't they? Because I think they were anyway, because they seemed to be wearing some sort of uniform.
Yeah, naturally, because you're in Asia. Everybody knows karate, you know. Karate.
Yeah, I just meant they all had white belts on, so I assume they were... which I also assume is why they liked it when he pushed one of them over, because they thought it was like a play/training exercise thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like everything you said, I don't have much else to say without giving away too much about this movie. But 13 Games Game of Death was... like I said, the title was a bit misleading because there wasn't a whole lot of death that our main character did himself. Because so it really was like a 13 game of let's fuck with your brain, you know, but that's not a good title for a movie, you know?
But the other title is 13 Beloved, which is the name of the website, I believe, because it's all uploaded onto a website for people to watch his struggle as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it had plenty of hits too, because people are sick people, you know, whatever.
Also, if you like this movie, you should definitely watch Death Tube.
I heard of that one.
Yeah, there's a clue in the name as to what it's about, but it is a little bit more Saw, but it's still got the whole online people watching it thing.
Gotcha.
And you do still have to play games, but there is a lot more sort of only 5 of you will make it through this challenge, only 4 of you will make it through this one sort of thing, so...
It's like a bloody musical chairs, see?
Yes, quite. I think there might actually be a game of musical chairs in it, or that might be another film. Nice. I like these sorts of films as well, where people have to do weird shit.
Beautiful. But, yeah, I guess ratings now. What do you give it for a rating?
I'm going to go pretty high. I think I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Yeah, I'm right up there, too. I'd say a good 8. I'm going to give it an 8 myself, just an 8, and... I really enjoyed it the first time watch. I've heard of it plenty of times, but I'd like to see it before this day. I caught a lot of the Asian cinema before it came, and I watched a lot of Thai action movies and a lot of Thai horror films because those outweigh the ones I like more than the horror stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But 8, solid film. I'd recommend it to anybody who wants to watch it.
I've seen it a handful of times now, and it always cheers me up. So.
Yeah. No comment. Cheers.
I like watching people suffer.
You know what really cheers my Craig? People suffering. Let me tell you right now. It makes me happy in no special way.
Oh, it so does. I love it when people get tortured and die horribly. I'm just like, ah, oh, bless you. Terrible life.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But yeah, I guess we'll... stroll on into my feature, which is Chocolate from 2006, I think. If you guys notice, we're not trying to pronounce any of these people's names, but it's basically about a girl who is born mentally disabled. She has autism, and she slowly learns from watching television and learn how to do martial arts, and she reflexes are keen, and she could, like, catch balls that were thrown at her and crazy stuff like that. And I love the scenes where she flips candy in her mouth, like, crazy, like, and, you know, just little simple stuff like that. But basically, their mother, well, her mother and friend of her to her pudgy friend, I guess, that's her cousin or something like that. I forget exactly what his role is. The mother becomes very ill, and their pudgy friend finds a book that basically has a list of people who owe the mother money. But they come to find out later in the film that the mother was tied into some weird mob thing with the Yakuza, and this is collection money from those people, and, you know, lots of kicking and flying and crazy stunts ensue. And this is a pretty cool film to me. What do you make about it, Emily?
I was raving about it as I was watching it. I really, really loved it. I mean, I like martial arts films, but I'm not the biggest fan of them in the world. But this just totally blew me away. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it's really strange. Like, you see, it's from 2008, by the way. I'm sorry about that. But you would think, like, her, like, letting out those, whoa, and shit like that. But she's just imitating what she saw on television. You know,
yeah.
That was that added something to it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really like that. I thought that was really sweet that she'd learned everything from the TV. So she did these sounds, even though she didn't really know why she was doing them. She just knew that it was part of the sequence, so she had to do it. I thought that was quite cool.
I like the way the story came together. You know, basically, I love my favorite character of the whole film is the... You don't know if it's a male or a female Yakuza boss. Because it had a very androgynous look to the he-she or whatever the hell was going on with that person. But the...
Oh, the one that was like... The one with the gun.
Yeah, the one with the gun, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's a woman. But she could just be... She could be a drag queen. It's not easy to tell. We'll be honest about that. But, I don't know.
Yeah, and her buddy, you know, Mang Moom. That says his full name. It just, He, I just thought he was a real cool guy, because he would take her out and basically hustle with her, throw a ball at my friend here, and she'll catch it instantly, like that's a big feat or something, but her reflexes were strong, but when somebody threw a knife at her, he's like, hey, what's the big idea, you know, stuff like that, and I just thought that the fact that he used her to hustle was kind of made me laugh my ass off, and just the action of this movie speaks for itself. I mean, this young girl can just do crazy stuff with her feet. And, it was just a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, the scene in the ice house and the scene. I love this. My favorite whole scene of the whole film, you know, next to the end, because the conclusion is pretty awesome, is the scene where she's fighting in the meat market.
Mm.
And she's afraid of the flies. So there's her little buddy swatting the flies away for her.
Yeah,
she can
so
fight,
cute.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you say he hustles, but he does do it for the right reasons. He is doing it to pay the doctors because he's sort of adopted, kind of, by Zen's mother. Zen's the autistic girl. So he's paying her back for looking after him, essentially. So it's not so bad that he's using her because they don't really have any other means of getting money. And obviously, I say using, but all she's doing is catching balls and things, which is stuff she did anyway. So it's not like he was doing anything particularly unpleasant.
Yeah.
Until he was like, yes, let's go kill these people for money.
Yeah, she didn't really kill anybody. She just kind of beat the crap out of them till they were pretty much down and out. And
yeah, but I'm pretty sure somebody probably died.
Possibly.
The ending, not before then.
Because a lot of the stunts were done by the people that were acting in the film, and there was a lot of hospitalization and stuff. And you saw the great stunt reel at the end of the movie, which made me laugh, you know. Her punching the locker backs and stuff like that, and doing crazy splits like you do. And it's just fucking enjoyable. I don't explain it. The story's good. It really is to make a really hokey story. And the rest of this girl's films, stories are kind of hokey, but she manages to do many different kinds of martial arts in these films. Like, in her next film, Raging Phoenix, she does a capoeira / breakdance fighting type moves in that movie.
Nice.
And it's not really much of a story, but to see her doing all these different fighting styles is really fun to watch. you know.
Yeah, I could just watch her spar with people for like 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about a plot. She is amazing. She's got this real sort of fluidity, almost like dancing, you know, like I forget her name, the woman who plays River in Serenity and Firefly. She was a ballet dancer. Summer, that is it. Summer Glau,
yeah.
Yeah. So she's got this, the same sort of fluid motion, you know, from one move to the next. But I think this film really takes it to the next level because, you know, she uses everything around her. I think part of this particular girl's autism is sort of sound-based. So she reacts to everything, to things that she can hear. She has a really sensitive sense of hearing. And that sort of is the basis for everything, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that you know, they played it real smart because the films that she was watching in the films were Tony Jaa films who trained this girl for the most part, I hear, and Jackie Chan films and Bruce Lee films,
mm-hmm.
especially with the Jackie Chan stuff, who used a lot of stuff that was around him in the fights. You know, they were very choreographed, of course, but he made it look very fluid on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled it off very well in this movie to make her use, like, the ice bricks and the ice house to, like, use those to her advantage, stuff like
that. Yeah, the locker doors and the tables and the hooks and the knives. Yeah, just everything around her becomes a potential weapon or stage for a fight, you know? She uses, like, the levels, the boxes, just everything is used. And I just think that's... It looks incredible, you know, because it's so... fast-paced and like punchy and as I've said, like fluid, you know, there's no moment where she stands there looking around, looking confused, going, what do I do next? Which, you know, you'd probably see an American film where it's a lot sort of rawer and less choreographed. But this looks amazing because of the way, you know, she goes from one guy to the next guy to the next guy and uses this thing here and slides under this and jumps over this. And it just, you know, it's this whole, it's almost like parkour, you know, free running style.
Well, especially the end.
Yeah, mixed with all of these movies, hundreds of movies that she's watched, and she picks up different styles and techniques from the people she's fighting as well. She just picks it up straight away just by watching them for a few seconds. And, you know, she reacts to sound, as I've said, which is how it all sort of started. And as you mentioned, I love that thing she does with the sweet. She has these little smarty M&M type things that she sort of throws around and listens to the sound of them moving and then just leaps forward and bites, eats them. It's wonderful. It's so sweet.
Yeah, I mean, deep in there, you had this whole secret love story, you know, between these two. It was almost like Romeo and Juliet in a lot of ways because they're opposing families in her mother and her father. That's why the father had to kind of stay away.
The father is Japanese, which is why she has a Japanese name.
Yeah.
But this mob boss, who is the bad guy, used to go out with her mother, who, and they're all Thai, which is why they're all sort of outcast.
And, you know, the real touching scene, you know, where at the end where Zen's mother, she doesn't get killed by cancer, she's killed by something else.
I know, it's all for nothing. If they hadn't gone and got that money, she would have died slowly of cancer. Instead, she died anyway, so it's kind of tragic.
But then she's got a really happy, bittersweet ending because she gets to be with her dad now and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
I was confused about that. What happens to the boy?
The boy, I would. They never really mentioned it, but I guess
I know. He goes with them, but he's just like there's this whole ending scene where she's with the father, and it's all oh, happy families reunited, and he's just not there. And I was like, oh, bless him.
I'd imagine they wouldn't leave Mae Moon there on the street all by himself. He's like 14 years old or something.
I know. You know. And I like that he joins in the fights as well. I mean, a lot of films do the sort of kick-ass superhero character and then the dorky sidekick who tries to fight and then gets knocked out immediately sort of thing. And they sort of do that stereotype, but he's not that bad. He does manage to, you know, kick one guy's ass at least, you know, and he is actually helpful, you know, in his own sort of unschooled way.
Well, even the thing with the flies.
Yeah, exactly. She's got this whole precision and wonderfulness, and he's just sort of in the background flailing, but it does work.
Because even the thing with the flies, though, was even like, you know, it's like the thing with the balls. She was distracted by too many things, you know, and that was they played the autism thing real well that especially in scenes like that, you would see it. Especially the thing with the fly. She was distracted by too many things, and a person with autism, that would drive them crazy. So him getting rid of the flies made it really believable that that was really a thing that was helping her, because she could focus on beating the crap out of these people and getting the money for her mother's surgeries or whatever.
I think she acted it really well as well. I mean, obviously she's being cast because she's such an amazing fighter. You know, that's the majority of her films are these sort of start martial arts films. But she plays this autistic girl in this. You know, she never looks anyone in the eye. She hardly talks. She plays a very believable character without sort of making fun of it or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a really good performance by her. But while saying that, I don't think they handled autism on the whole that well.
No, they didn't dwell on it or anything, but it was known throughout the film that there was definitely something wrong with her.
No, that wasn't my problem. My problem was, one, the doctors and everyone kept saying she was essentially mentally deficient or something and handicapped and all this sort of crap. And two, I really wasn't comfortable with the fight with the other autistic kid.
Yeah.
That made me really uncomfortable. It's like, oh, I know how to fight an autistic child. Let's throw another autistic child.
Oh, you mean like the yeah.
They clearly don't know what's going on. Let's make them fight to the death.
Was weird.
What? Oh, that was not cool.
Yeah, we got our own retard.
Exactly. That's how they were thinking. Oh. That was not cool.
It was fun to watch. You know,
I think it looked really cool.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate the sort of the challenge of it, because he was sort of her equal and he had this style that she wasn't used to. So there was a clash there and she started losing. And, you know, on the whole, I thought the scene worked really well. It was just the fact that it was two autistic kids that made me really uncomfortable about it, because, you know, they may have known what was going on in the situation, but they may not have. You know, this poor lad might have just been forced to fight for something that he has no idea what's going on. Maybe he does, but there's no way of finding that out. It just made me a bit weird.
Yeah.
I think it was quite close to the knuckle for me, because autism runs in my family as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously seeing films with autism in them, it does sort of strike a chord. But I will say this was a lot better than Burning Bright with their autistic child in the house, the tiger bullshit. That was fucking terrible. That was so bad.
Okay.
Like, again, he did quite a good performance of it. It was just at the end, you know, they defeat the tiger and they go to live their happy life together, and suddenly he's cured and he's not autistic anymore and he doesn't mind holding her hand. And I was like, what the hell? Like, you don't cure autism. It's not an illness. It's not a disease. That pissed me off. So, yeah, this definitely beats that, but there were a couple of sort of iffy moments.
Yeah. Anything else I want to say about this, actually? Not too much, but watch Chocolate, because it's on Netflix streaming in America. And if you got an app for your add-on for your browser, you can watch Netflix America. I might put a link in the show notes just for that, for you people.
Shh, I don't know anything about this.
But, I'm so glad Magnet puts out stuff like this, because Magnet is it's a label that puts out, I think it put out all of her films so far, at least two of them. They put out this one and The Girl Kicks Ass, I think it's called, for sure. Magnet put those two out. Maybe Raging Phoenix, too. Don't quote me on that, but I've seen it on Netflix streaming before. But they put out movies like that. They put out the horror stuff, but they put out a lot of the Asian stuff that you would normally see. And they put out Goon, which is one of my favorite hockey movies of all time, which I hope never leaves Netflix streaming, you know?
You just have to keep watching it so they know people are still watching it, so they can't take it down.
That is unrelated to this movie, but I happen to love that movie very much. But that's about the size of this. Anything else you want to say about it, girl?
A little bit more about the fighting is, you just obviously they're doing as much of it as possible themselves, but I really like that it was believable. You know, you get a lot of movie like old-fashioned martial arts movies where everything's on strings and things, and they do these, you know, jumping three-story buildings and stuff, and in its own way it's nice. But on the other hand, this was really nice to see, you know, this tiny little child beating full-grown men, not because she somehow has super strength, but because she uses these amazing techniques and is fast and, you know, uses their own strength and weight against them and things like that. So it was nice to see. It was really cool to watch this believable but also epic fight sequences. So yeah, this is like one of my favorite films now. I was so glad you made me watch it. It was really cool.
Beautiful. Ratings? I'm going to give it a 10 because I like it from start to finish. And I don't say that about a lot of films, but this is a 10 for me. And I'm going to leave it at that. What's it for you, girl?
Purely because of the slightly iffiness, 9.5. Loses 0.5 remark for that. But we can forgive it because it's not really the main focus of the story.
Great. And right after this, we'll come back and close out the show.
You want the solution to great podcasting? Hi, friends. James the St. Cox here on From Who Filmed This Shit podcast. I'm not only here as a great podcaster, I'm here not just boast about it, but also the merits of the holy fuck and other inferior podcasts. Yes, friends on Facebook and elsewhere, you heard me right. Now, here's an example. Some online podcast which only reviews film movies that were filmed in the last week or two. That's each and every week, by the way. I'm sorry, that's just not good enough for my taste. Yes, sir. Now, here's another fucker. A name with good movie reviews, good presenters, good production values, and even some decent humour to boot. But I'm sort of saying, it's competition. And this just don't shit mean shit to me. Ah, yes, sir. Now, remember, friends. Oh, shit. What's this? Another fucking asshole pushing into me? Pushing into me as a podcaster, folks. A podcaster. He says he wants to start a podcast and he wants to take over my business. Take this, you lousy competition.
You fucking high!
Yes, sir. It was too fucking high. Thank God I managed to stop him in time. Now, remember, friends. That's Who Filmed This Shit podcast over on Podbean. Or just type Who Filmed This Shit on Facebook. You'll find me. Now, hold on, I've got just a goddamn minute. What the hell is this? Is this a brand new podcast trying to muscle in on my territory? Or I'm sorry, it's just too fucking bad. Yes, sir, we blew the shit out of that midfield podcast, motherfucker. Just like we blew the shit loose shit out of all their podcasters everywhere down here. And Who Filmed This Shit Studios. Did you hear what I'm podcasting? That's Who Filmed This Shit Podcasting. Did you hear what I'm podcasting?
Greetings, fellow Eternians. This is Baby Skeletor, and I am here to talk about one of my favorite podcasts in the entire universe, namely the Creepy Kit Podcast. Here, Sins, Stace, and other guests, along with Editor Lou, give you your semi-regular dosage of double features of excellent horror movies, horror crushes, and weekly fuck-offs. You can find the show at creepykitch.blogspot.com or by searching for Creepy Kitch in iTunes. Listen to the show, or I swear I will pee in your butt, and I am quite sincere about that.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. And we're proud to announce that this theater will soon bring you the greatest array of pictures ever to reach our screen. You'll see the finest stars in exciting performances. You'll thrill to the suspense, comedy, romance, and drama of world-famous stories. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
The story of the Crusaders, the downfall of the Armada, the destruction of Napoleon, and now the thing that will scatter our enemies again. Gresham needs no introduction.
Oh,
replacement. All these months he's wanted to be out here with me. Well, you can't go up alone. And as neath the wreckage he lay, as he lay. I'm going home. I've had enough, and I'm going home.
I have every intention of coming for this, and so should you.
Join the Navy.
You join the Navy.
What's so funny?
You, man.
Fly in the low and see the Navy.
What for? Jets. Want to fly jets?
Blood of family by the stream.
Grace, look at yourself. Officers don't have tattoos.
What's your name, boy?
Mayo. Zach Mayo, sir.
Go, go, come on, baby.
You got a girl, Mayo, the what?
No, I ain't looking for one either.
What are you looking for?
I'll tell you something about the local girls that come across the Sound on the ferry every weekend. Just one thing in mind, and that's to marry themselves a naval aviator.
I heard about these girls, they're looking for a husband.
Not me.
I will use every means necessary, fair and unfair. Trip you up. Expose your weaknesses as a potential aviator and as a human being. I expect to lose half of you before I'm finished.
So get out of here! I think it'd be a gas to fly.
Just how far would you go to get back? Would you let yourself get pregnant?
Don't trick him or try to trap him.
So, Zach, what do you do with the girl when you're through with her, huh?
I see you've had some training, man, eh?
Oh!
In every class, always one joker who thinks that he's smarter than me.
What kind of a human being are you?
You better lock it up, boy.
I'm trying to be nice to you. I'm trying to be your friend, Zach.
Well, then be a friend. Get out of here.
Now, why would a slick little hustler like you want to sign up for this kind of abuse anyway?
I want to fly jets, sir.
My grandmama wants to fly jets.
No, man, you ain't nothing special. And if you ask me, you ain't got no chance of being no officer.
I ain't gonna quit.
You're out.
Don't you do it. Don't. I got nowhere else to go!
Richard Gere, Deborah Winger. An officer and a gentleman.
Well, that was episode 10, folks. I think that was a good one. I had fun talking about these Thai films with the bird here. How about you, Bird?
No, it was terrible.
Every show is awful.
It is. I'm forced to be here.
I got a chain in my basement.
You kidnapped my cat. Help me. Help me.
Definitely. Yeah, the cat thing. They taste good on toast or something. I don't know exactly.
No. That's it. I'm ending this conversation right now.
Yeah, I forgot there was animal death in that first movie. I forgot to mention that. But, you know, whatever. I'm over it already. But Emily, tell the folks what theme we're having for next show.
The next show, based on Gary's suggestion, the beard suggestion, we're going to have an aviation-themed episode. Do you want to tell them what you're doing, or should I go straight with mine?
Go straight with yours. Tell them what you're doing.
Okay, well, both of these are new films for us. My choice is Aces High, a 1976 movie starring Malcolm McDowell and Christopher Plummer, directed by Jack Cold, and I don't know anything about it, so I'm just going to read the synopsis that it's on IMDb, which is: a naive young officer straight from school arrives on the Western Front to fight the air war against the Germans. However, the life expectancy of green pilots is not very good. So hopefully there's a bit more to it than just that, but we'll see.
Yeah. The film I chose is a film, surprisingly, this is probably a scratched off my bucket list movie, is the classic An Officer and a Gentleman from 1982, starring Richard Gere, the awesome Lou Gossett Jr., and Deborah Winger. The plot synopsis, the cheap one, is a young man must complete his work as a Navy flight school to become an aviator, with the help of a tough gunnery sergeant and his new girlfriend. Like I said, it's been around forever. Never seen it before. It's got a great cast. It's directed by Taylor Hackford, who's done a bunch of stuff. And that's what I'm doing for next week for our aviation episode. And
Should we just do that next episode? We just sit for an hour and make plane noises.
That's all next episode is going to be, guys. We're not talking about the films at all. Maybe we get to it eventually, but just make a lot of plane noises. But anything you want to push at all, girl?
No, I don't think so. I've literally done nothing since we recorded last, apart from boring old day job work. But I did nearly die in a fire, so that's exciting. But you can't follow the fire on Twitter, so nothing really. Just the usual stuff, Facebook and Twitter. And if you don't know where that is by now, then look on the website, because the beard posts it all anyway, so you should be able to find me no problem.
Yeah, you can find me, Cinema Beef as I record a show in a couple weeks, but I'm planning on fixing that and recording a new one, probably either with Willis or with Vaughn. There's a couple prospects out there that I have, for potential episodes, but I gotta pull it all together. Two Drink Minimum commentaries still rolling on. Jason Lloyd tells me we're doing well on the Horrorphilia Network. We got a few hundred downloads per show so far, so that's rocking along on there.
Cool.
Not sure how it's doing on Legion Podcast. Bo's still got to tell us what our numbers are, because Bo is our webmaster. Speaking of which, if you go to legionpodcast.com and you see the donate button, if you click on it and you want to give us a couple schmeckles to our webmaster, Bo, he would appreciate it. It keeps this party rolling on with the Legion Podcast Network. And it sounds like I'm begging for something, but not really. He asked me to talk about this, so you know. There you go, Bo. And what else is going on? You can find me on Twitter, at GW. You can find me on the Cinema Beef Facebook group. You can find me on, if you would like, the Burn the Beard page on Facebook. We'd all appreciate that. And then, contest is still running. Still waiting for your iTunes reviews for the show. You can have potential to win 4 prizes. I'll pick names out of a hat at random. We get to about 20 or so. And then, you have 4 chances to win. Either you put in a review for this show, Cinema Beef Podcast, 2 Drink Venom commentaries, or Sausage Fest reviews. You could win one of those 4 prizes. And I might throw another one in the mix just to sweeten the pot. If I haven't sweetened the pot enough for you people, yeah, I'm done with you. I'm playing. I love my people. But please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps our ratings. It helps people recognize it helps people see the podcast more. It does a lot of things for people, apparently, that I couldn't tell you for sure what it does. But, you know, there you have it.
It makes us feel really good about ourselves.
Yeah, probably more especially we really think we should.
Make my ego swell.
Yeah, me least all. You know, I don't give a fuck about myself. You know, but the bird, her ego, I think, is bigger than my house. I think, just throw it up.
Oh yeah, I'm vain. Also, if you want to send me money as well, that's totally cool. I'm fine with that.
Just no weird naked pictures in lieu of money. You know.
Yeah. Well, it is nearly my birthday, so I expect presents from all of you. All of you.
You don't want to see this birthday suit. That's hairy and disgusting. You don't want to see that, okay?
Are you saying I'm hairy and disgusting?
No, I'm saying I'm like a Sasquatch. You don't want to see that, you know?
I am too.
You're going to churn off the listening audiences. They're under this illusion that, you know, you want to go out with them or something, you know? That's the sauciness of the female co-host, you know?
Oh. Yeah, well, if you send me money, I will shave my chest.
To say, hey, good looking. Boy. But, yeah, that's the end of episode 10. I hope you guys enjoyed the previous 9 and this one as well. And we're going to keep on trucking after that, too. Got any parting words, Emily? We still need to come up with that closing thing, you know?
Oh, we didn't. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, well, I think the main thing to focus on is this competition we got going, so get on and rate, review, subscribe, and enjoy.
I will gladly send internationally, too, because I'm not a cheap bastard. It might take a while for it to get to you, but, you know, I'll send it to you for sure, though. But, yeah, that's about it, and see you guys all again next time.
Ciao!